The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guests on Off the Shelf are Joanne Wojtek. Joanne is the NASA SOUP Program Manager, and Rob Cohen. Rob is the Acting Director for NIH's GWAC program. And Joanne and Rob, welcome to the show. Great to see you again.
Thanks for having us, Roger.
Well, I'm looking forward to this conversation. One of my favorite topics are is interagency contracting, government-wide contracting, and the IT GWACs in particular, and the value they provide. Customer agencies and opportunities for contractors. And I thought what I'd do first is just open it up to you guys and so you can provide a sort of update on where your programs are. And I know we're going to start with Joanne. Joanne, tell us about NASA SOUP. What's the latest and greatest news? And I know you've been in the news lately.
In the news, both good and bad and, yeah. and different. We are currently, well, first of all, what is NASA SOUP? Since some of you may not know
yeah.
that. We're a government-wide acquisition contract vehicle, or a GWAC, for IT and communications and AV products and product-related services. And we're used by every agency in the government to purchase those products and related services. We're in our fourth iteration right now, and the mentioning of the news is the fact that we started the awarding of the follow-on contracts with SOUP-5 and then received some protests and are currently in that process of dealing with those and extended SOUP-4 to continue on for 6 months so we can make sure that we get past those protests. Also, it's going to give us a chance to, in the meantime, bring in some of the ideas and functionality that we were putting into SOUP-5. We're going to actually start doing in January with the SOUP-4 contract so that we can get a leg up on some of these new things.
So build a foundation.
Right? Yes. We have some new ideas in terms of tracking and reporting and working with some of the CIOs out there. So we're excited about that, even though we're going to have to do it with the older contracts.
Sure. And can you give the listeners a context of how much government business goes through NASA SOUP in terms of obligations by customer agencies and that sort of thing?
Right. So we do about $2.5 to $3 billion a year. With that speed, a billion. It's 25,000 orders. So we're primarily hitting the average middle size for IT product awards, about $100,000 an order. So it's rather than getting one or a few large contracts, we deal with a lot of smaller ones, which kind of gives you a different view than perhaps is you'll see with some of the service contracts are much larger.
Sure.
Yeah.
So and your biggest customers is that one with all the money and the guns? And
yes, it's kind of the one with all the money. Yeah. Surprisingly enough, Defense Department is our number one, and VA is actually our second biggest contract. We're one of their primary contracts that they use. Justice Department is in the top five, along with Treasury and NASA.
Okay. And we'll come back to some more. Hey, Rob, good to see you again. Welcome
sure,
to the show.
Roger.
And how about a little update on NIH's GWAC portfolio?
Sure. So as many people know, the NIH GWAC program
is
made
up of... Are you going to change
jobs here, Rob? The three GWACs that we run are the CIO-SP3, the CIO-SP3 Small Business, and currently the ECS3 GWAC. So we've in year two and three of the CIO-SP3 contracts. In this past year, we had a tremendous growth in the use of those contracts, with about $4.5 billion in use. Very proud to say that 50% of the use of those contracts went to small businesses. And that was the intent of when we designed these contracts, to create a separate vehicle for the small businesses that has not only just small business socioeconomic group, but also 8A and Hub Zone and Service Disabled Veteran, as well as women. And we're seeing that all of those socioeconomic groups are taking advantage of these contracts, and customers are taking advantage of being able to place those set-aside orders to get their IT service needs met through those contracts. Our third contract is, as I said, is ECS3, It's mainly a products-related services vehicle, and that contract is in the process of being recompeted through to award to the new CIOCS GWAC. We're in the pre-award phase and selection phase for that vehicle, and actually in the process of extending the ECS3 contract for a bridge to until that contract is awarded. So that's basically what's going on with the program.
What do you attribute the growth? You said $4.5 billion last year or this year, last fiscal year. What do you see? What are your customers like about?
Yeah, so in fiscal year 13, we did about $2.7 billion, and we grew to the next year, this past year, to about $4.5 billion. We really attribute that growth to the success of the customers' needs being met, the value that we're offering those customers, the service that we're able to provide them. We see a lot of repeat use of the contracts, but we also see a lot of expansion into new agencies that we've never done business before. We have a concentrated effort to reach out to make sure that contracting officers and buyers throughout the government are aware of these vehicles. They know that they're an option to them. And as you know, there are many options of buying IT, but being able to provide them an option that provides them a quicker, a simplified, with a quality and an integrity of a program that has been around, that has been able to prove that it is able to meet the needs of the customers. So that's what we stand on, and that's our philosophy, is to make sure that we're providing a quality service and that our customers get what they want and they get it in a timely basis.
Right. Well, I know that's the track record of NASA Soup as well. And, you know, one of the things I always hear about your contract program, Joanne, is it's very efficient in terms of the ability to add new products quickly to be able to, for companies to be able to compete with those new products when they mod the contract to meet customer needs and that sort of thing. And can you talk a little bit about that or why your customers, I mean, you're the oldest GWAC.
Yes.
and have been very successful over that time. Can you talk a little bit about, from your perspective, what's worked well for you?
So certainly responsiveness is a big thing. And it's not just, you know, people always say the order piece and yeah, that's true, but it's the responsiveness overall. We go to places and we'll talk to somebody and so I say, yeah, we called them and they answered the phone. Or, yeah, you know, we
sent
an email.
How about that, right?
and 5 minutes later, we got an answer from Joanne, you know.
Right.
And so we have a very strong rule of one business day for anything. If any interaction is made with us, we will deal with it in one business day. Now, will it be finished now, but it will be dealt with and responded to. And that goes to adding products. It goes to responding to our customers and any assistance that we provide. So we're very... We look at that as a hallmark for us, is that responsiveness. And then the customer service itself, we really have a strong, dedicated staff that really wants to help the customer, and it shows mm-hmm. it to them. So it gives them that start of a feel, okay, if I use you, I have somebody behind us and that will be there to respond to issues and problems. And that helps. It's much in the same way with Rob, the growth that we're seeing. I think in all the GWACs, as we all get better at that customer service.
Sure. Now, do you see, you know, do you have ideas of, you know, you guys are both growing at the same time the budget is shrinking, right? Where do you see your programs? Just you're going to continue to build on that success? I mean, when you think about it, as a percentage of overall spend, you're both actually increasing your percentage of the market.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're growing while the overall IT market is shrinking.
Right. I think that there's two parts. And at the Coalition for Government Procurement seminar recently, we were on a panel with Kay Lee.
Thank you for mentioning that, John.
Oh, you're welcome. and she made a very good point, and that is we're not the three GWACs and schedules. We're really not competitors. What we're competitors with is open market.
Right.
And that's where there's a lot of opportunities. So the percentage, unfortunately, is rather small still for the GWAC usage, and then there's the do-it-yourself sort of contracts. And where a lot of our growth is coming from is those do-it-yourself contracts and people coming to us now and saying, wait, we can use you.
Right.
And realizing that, and then we can provide an infrastructure and support and actually more control than they can provide themselves, because we have that infrastructure, we have the database, we have the staffing, the help desk that they would have to build themselves to duplicate. So more CIOs and more procurement shops are understanding that.
Rob?
Yeah. Yeah, so, and I agree with Joanne. I think that for the past 5 years, since I came to NIH, you know, what I looked at is what is the biggest challenge? And the biggest challenge is not trying to find out what NASA SUPE is doing or how much business GSA is doing, but it's always, and what I found out is that 90% of the IT procurements weren't using any of those shops.
Right, so, yeah, so, that's a great point.
So the challenge was to get out there to make sure that contracting officers knew that these contracts were available to them. So when we go out and we talk to customers, and we do it on a regular basis through trainings or briefings or meeting with senior procurement executives throughout the government, it's really just to tell them that these contracts are available. They should be an option for your contracting officers. And what we find is that they just didn't know.
Right.
So we get in front of them and we tell them how it works, and we get them to understand the process. And I think that is the biggest challenge, is to get out there and get the word out. And I think that NASA SUPE has been doing this for years and has been very effective at it. We've been doing it, and it's really working. And it's about education.
Right.
Contracting officers have many different ways that they can buy. And what we find that when we go out and we talk to customers is that they typically buy the way they've been buying for 30 years.
Right, because that's the way we always
change,
did it. Right.
Change behavior. And that's, once you can sit in front of somebody in a classroom environment and really show them how it works, the simplicity of it, the quality of the service, the quality of the contracts, and build their comfortability level into looking at something new, that's what works.
Right. And on that note, we do have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue on, tease that out a little bit, talk contract proliferation, which is you guys have both touched on here. But right now, we do have to take a break. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Joanne Wojtek. Joanne is the NASA SUPE Program Manager, and Rob Cohen, the Acting Director for NIH's GWAC program. And when we took the break, both Rob and Joanne, you had addressed what you're doing to to advance the use of your contract vehicles, which to me makes a lot of sense from a taxpayer perspective, to reduce contract duplication or contract proliferation, which is something that I hear from industry a lot about in terms of the amount of time and effort and bid and proposal costs they have to go after chasing those open market, sort of allegedly unique IDIQ contracts that agencies put in place when, their frustration is the customer agencies could be using contracts like the ones at NIH, the ones at NASA, the ITG WACs. So I just, want to go there and talk a little bit about contract proliferation, what you're seeing, what your thoughts on it are. Are there, and if you want to talk a bit more about how your outreach is trying to impact that, that'd be great too. Go ahead, Joy.
Okay. So I do think that, we talked earlier about the fact that the GWAC programs are growing, maybe not as fast as we'd like. And I would also point out that I'm not big on growth for the growth's sake, and
sure,
I make that clear. My job is not dependent on how big I am. It's how good of a job I do. But the bigger we are, the stronger we are also as a program, and the better I can leverage the scalability of the efforts. So there is something good for the government also. It's not just proliferation hurts in terms of industry, but we can make it be a stronger program by having that growth. So I keep that in mind when I go out and try to talk to agencies and say, use us, and what does it gain you? Well, it does gain you that infrastructure. I do think in the past year, we have made a very concerted effort, and by we, I mean my staff, but mostly on my behalf, has gone out and really worked with some CIOs. And I actually went to one meeting where we were basically being begged by the CIO to let them use us. And it's right. Like, well, yes, you go ahead. And in fact, they were even saying, can we give you money? It's like, no, you don't have to give us money. We'll work, we'll give you what you need. And that's the message that they don't get until we come out and talk with them, is that's our job, is to give them what they need.
So you're saying that's it's a direct order, direct bill model, right?
Right.
So that the customer agency is, you know, through your infrastructure deal directly with the contractors, place the order, and then also pay them, right?
Right, and then, but we also provide a lot of that support that gets them there, and so
sure.
So it makes it very easy for them, and when they realize that what they can get for what little it costs for any of these contracts is really very small, and we can and then it's like and we will structure it. It's not just we don't come in and say here's what you have to do. We come in and say here's what the FAR says. Here's how we operate. Now, what do you want to do in that regard? I always use the statement that we're very flexible. We can do whatever you want as long as you stay in the sandbox of what we do. And there's a lot of flexibility in the FAR. There's a lot of flexibility in the contracts that we build into it as long as you stay along the lines that you're given. To try to step out of them, and we have a lot of control at the same time, and we will shut you down if
sure.
you try to go and do something that you're not supposed to do. And if you realize that balance, that's a great thing about a GWAC is we know those things that let you play both ways. It takes some of those concerns that agencies have of, well, how do I know what I'm doing, and so on. So,
right, Rob, do you see that? Do you hear customers saying, well, we're unique. We have to create our own contract?
Right, so... I spend a lot of time going out and talking to customers, and it's sort of like our own little myth-busting campaign.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Hey, there
so
we go.
So we're trying to get out there, and we're trying to tell them what are the truths behind using a GWAC. And, you know, and as you said, one of the biggest things we hear back is that, well, we got some unique requirements that only we can develop and only we can, you know, go out in the open market and compete and get what we want. So we try to make them, you know, aware and educate them that they can do whatever they want underneath these GWACs as long as it falls within the scope of the contract and they're following the right FAR clauses and how it works. And they can add terms and conditions that are suitable to their agencies and specific to their requirements. And so once they hear that and once they see it, then it opens up their eyes and they go, oh, we don't really have to go out and create another contract. We can leverage the. We're seeing more and more of that. More and more of agencies, not only because they think it's the greatest idea in the world, they're doing it because they have to do it. Their budgets are shrinking. They're
sure.
looking for ways to save money. They're looking for ways to save on resources. The resources it takes to go out and create their own vehicles is quite an endeavor, and it costs a lot of money. And looking at new ways of doing things so that they can leverage what's out there, I think that's also working. So that there are many different myths that we go out there and we try to bust, and whether it has to do with the cost of using the vehicles or as I said, or the terms and conditions. But there's so many different benefits that they get with respect to reporting. A lot of agencies want to know what are they buying, you know, and from an IT perspective. And if you use a GWAC. And consistently use a GWAC, you can come to the GWAC office and they can tell you, this is what your agency bought last year, this is what you paid for it, and this is who you bought it from. So there are a lot of those
sure.
different things that agencies just don't know about that, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to communicate that message to those buyers.
Right. It seems to me, I've got an idea for you, is that you know, when somebody says it's unique, you said, well, you know what? Our contracts allow you to focus on the unique aspect. We've put all that process in place for you.
That's exactly right. I use the term framework. We're the framework for you to build your unique requirements on. That's exactly right. In fact, one of the things that I get really excited when I'm in a meeting, and it happened recently with a very large program that used to do its own, and now they're going to use us. And the guy said, I suddenly realized it's going to take me 2 years to do my own, and you already did all that work.
Right.
I said, wow, somebody got
light
it.
Light bulb right there. Yeah. So... another aspect of it that's kind of interesting dynamic these days is the FAR language around, you know, using other contracts and Part 17. I know it's something that, you know, my organization, the Coalition, commented on back when the rulemaking was done for that. And it seems to, you know, push, you know, towards having to create your own contract vehicle as opposed to using pre-existing ones like NIH and NASA SOUP. Is that your experience with it, or has it become more nuanced in the way agencies are applying it? Any thoughts on that?
I think as with any FAR situation.
And you know, we're really getting geeky now when we start talking about the FAR. And I think it was a Part 17.5, I think it is. Right?
To me, it's... I always say I have 10,000 customers, and they all have 10,000 ideas of what the FAR says. And
that's all.
and they all think that they're right, and everybody else is wrong. And so, and much the same with the FAR 17. Most of them understand that there are, you know, you follow the FAR, and you have to document based on it. And there's things, but we can help them do that. And if they come to us, we do. And then there are others that say, "Oh my gosh, it says I have to do, you know, 5 million new things," which it doesn't say, but right. they interpret it in such a strong way. And you know, quite honestly, at some point, there's some people who you just can't help. You know, if they're going to interpret a certain way, that's going to be their interpretation. We can give them our view. We can give them our, you know, what others have done. And for the most part, you know, if somebody wants to use you and you're doing everything right, they'll find a way to do it. If, you know, but if they don't, they'll also find a way not to do it. And this might just give them another reason not to.
Right. And that language in Part 17, right, is something to the effect that if you're going to use some other contract, you have to document why it's the best procurement method to meet your needs.
Right.
And our view was, if you're going to require that of a use of a GWAC or whatever, you ought to be having the same level playing field for anything you want to do open market. Why is that? That would at least, you know, then you could at least say, well, if I do open market, it's going to take me 2 years and cost X when I could go place an order tomorrow with NIH or with NASA. So,
of course, I think the key part there is, well, we've already proven that we have a benefit. If you're a GWAC, and what people don't necessarily understand, they don't go through it. It's not easy to be a GWAC. We have to do a major business case with OMB, and you know, we have to get approval. We can't just say we have a business case, we don't care.
Right.
We do care, and we do have to show that benefit.
Right. That's a great point.
Rob probably
talked about that. Any thoughts on that?
So recently, this past summer, we did a forum with industry and with government about this very topic, this best procurement approach topic. And as a result of that forum, the recommendations that were made to OMB is to flip-flop the wording. And the best procurement approach wording should be that if you're creating your own vehicle, write a justification. If you're using an existing vehicle, go ahead.
Sure. I agree with that.
That has been the recommendation that's been made to OMB. And I just think that it's going to go through the process, but it leaves a little flip-flop in that area within the FAR.
Sure.
In order to, you know, promote the whole reducing the proliferation of contracts. I mean, you have to have some serious wording behind that, and it has to be in the FAR. Right now, it's not.
Right. And to both your points, the idea that you go through all this process to create these contracts and business case and all the things that OMB requires, and then to say, well, yeah, this high bar before you can use them—that makes no business sense, right?
I mean, the three GWAC agencies need to go through that extensive process to get at the OMB, the director, to sign off to say that yes, you can move forward with this vehicle, and it is of value to the government,
right?
I mean, although there is a business case process for every agency to go through to create their own IDIQs or these large vehicles, there's no meat to it. I mean, it's you create a business case and you move forward,
right? Pretty much that's the case. That's what we've seen. Yeah. But right now we have to take our second break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Joanne Wojtek. She is a NASA SUP program manager, and Rob Cohen, the acting director for NIH's GWAC program. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today my guests are Joanne Wojtek. She is a NASA SUP program manager, and Rob Cohen, the acting director for NIH's GWAC program. And you know, Rob, you had mentioned earlier that 50% of the value of orders under your program last year went to small business. And I think, Joanne, NASA SUP has a very similar percentage. That's a great track record. That's far exceeds the government-wide goal of 23%. It's still 23%, right?
Yes.
They haven't mm-hmm. passed anything saying, hey, you've got to raise it to 25 or whatever that language is out there in the past. What do you see are some of the key features, aspects, strategies that have made both your contracts, I'll start with you, Rob, but both your contract programs so successful with regard to small business?
So first of all, when we went to make award on the small business contracts to the small businesses, they had a higher standard to meet. So we believe that we have some real quality contractors who are able to provide those very detailed and difficult challenges that the government's trying to meet. But having contractors who have been vetted and gone through the process to be able to prove their capabilities really adds some value to the process. So federal customers can feel very comfortable that they're coming to the contract, they're able to set aside a requirement, whether it's complex or difficult to meet, or meeting some of the new innovative challenges in IT, that those contractors are able to do it. So we're seeing some very large orders getting placed against the small vehicle on set asides on the small business contracts. And these contractors are able to deliver. So that is it's a track record that is you know, spreading by word of mouth throughout the government, and that agencies know that these contractors are able to perform, and they're able to perform well. So that's one of the ways that I see the growth in the small business area of our contracts. The other thing that we do is we like to go out and we promote it. We promote the use of our vehicles with a lower fee, and working through a lot of the small business associations and working through the OSDBU offices at a lot of the different agencies. They're very enthusiastic about the contracts and try to spread the word throughout their agencies on the value in using these contracts and meeting their small business goals. We also encourage the large prime contractors on our vehicles to really, we have a high subcontracting requirement for them to meet their small business goals. So I have a track record of 15 years working for the Small Business Administration. Yep. So it's been a passion of mine throughout my career is to help support small businesses, and whatever we can do to help support those businesses to make sure they're successful on our contracts, we take that very seriously. And we try to provide the support to our contract holders so that they can be successful on these contracts. It's quite an investment to be able to put together a proposal and to win a contract in these types of vehicles. And we want every one of those companies to be successful. And we will do whatever we can to help them to be successful.
Now, has it helped your contract? You mentioned, I think, in the first segment that you have various different socioeconomic categories on your contract. Are they... They're all together, but you can.
So customers can come to the vehicles and they can decide what set aside category they want to use. So that's been very valuable. It was the first large service IDIQ vehicle that did that.
Right. So that most of the other ones have separated, like it'd be one contract for just like 8A.
8A, or, right, one for service disabled. But what we did was We created a vehicle that had all of the five socioeconomic groups, so that you could come to the vehicle and you can set it aside, and it automatically goes out and competes with that set aside category. And customers really like that, and they like that the ease of use and the simplicity of being able to do a set aside and get what they need.
Joanne, thoughts on your success in small business area?
So 7 years ago, we did the first SDVOSB set aside for a contract vehicle of this type, and we were a little uncertain at the time as to how that would work. And it was interesting going back recently and looking. And for example, one of our companies started off like $10,000 the first year, $100,000 the second year, the third year they did $14 million. And I think part of the success is based on the company. What happened with that company and all the companies that have been successful is they began to understand how to operate. You can't just get one of these contracts and suddenly be a success. Now, of course, we help them and we have meetings and we train as needed, but it's also something to say about the companies themselves that they're willing to put in the effort, because if you don't put in the effort, you're not going to get awards. And those that have succeeded put in that effort, and then you can make use of those, the breakouts and set-asides, much like what Rob was talking about, and we'll have that in Soup 5 similarly with the different socioeconomic groups. So it's the right trend, but if you don't have that company, it's still not going to be very good. So you start with the company, and then you provide the program that supports them.
Right. The small businesses have to understand that this is an opportunity to compete for future work, right?
It's right.
And some people call it, in the schedules contact, they call it a hunting license, right? Mm-hmm. But your success is dependent on, the program from a sense of how efficient and effective it is in reaching customers, but then the small businesses have to understand how to operate and compete in the market as well.
And provide a value to the customer, right, beyond just, being a small business.
Right. Which you talked about a lot. Rob, you mentioned there's some very large orders for small businesses and pretty complex. Do you have on ramps and off ramps on your contract, the small business contract?
We have a provision within the contracts to allow for that. And, you know, after the 3 years anniversary of the contracts, we'll consider on-ramping small businesses in certain areas if we have a need. And we want to make sure that we have sufficient competition, let's say, in the service-disabled veteran category. Some businesses graduate and they move on or get bought out or lots of different acquisitions and different things that happen. Certainly we will be looking at that at the 3-year mark and especially at the 5-year mark when we do the official recertification to ensure that over the 10 years of this contract, there'll be sufficient competition in each one of those areas.
All right. Joanne, Dave, how do you handle
that? I have a personal concern with on-ramps that are just on-ramps. And I'm not speaking about Rob's program, but I know of other programs where it's just like, well, you're a small business, I'll give you a contract, and that's an on-ramp. You have to still have, we're going through now almost over 2 years to get Soup 5 awarded, and the companies that get the award went through a lot themselves.
Sure, absolutely.
So any sort of process that would do that has to take that in consideration. So at this point, you know, we're hoping that we have enough to start with that will get us through that 5-year mark. But as with any contract, as Rob was pointing out, at 5 years, you do a recertification. We certainly would look at, and if they all graduated, we'd have to do something because we want to continue to support them. But we would do it at the same level of requirements.
Right. It sounds to me you're not philosophically opposed to on-ramps. It's just how you execute it to make sure you get, you know, the quality contractors that you want to have. Is it?
Right. So exactly. I mean, the way it would be executed on our vehicles, just so everybody knows, is that we would be going through a full-blown solicitations, right. Source selection, rigorous process that the same contractors went through to get on the vehicle to begin with. So it would be very competitive.
Right. Yeah.
And you know what? I have to do some more business, so we do have to take our next break. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Joanne Wojtek. She's the NASA SUE Program Manager, and Rob Cohen, the Acting Director for NIH's GWAC program. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Joanne Wojtek. She's NASA SUE Program Manager, and Rob Cohen, the Acting Director for NIH for the NIH's GWAC program. And, you know, this segment, we'll just do a far-ranging discussion, so to speak. I guess I'm searching for the words, but really, I think it's important to talk a little bit about what you're hearing from your customers. We've talked about a lot of the aspects of your programs and how they meet customer needs, but you know, the customer needs are always evolving, and be interesting to hear from both of you about what are customers telling you about their requirements, about their challenges, where they need to go, things that they need from a program like NIH and NASA SUE. So, Joanne, go ahead.
So first of all, just to lead into how do I know what we want, because sometimes my staff says, how do you know that they want this?
Right.
we do a lot of training and outreach, and mostly it's myself, my deputy, that go out and do that training. And it's not because we can't have other people do training, but it's actually my ability to go out and then meet with the customer face-to-face and hear their concerns. They won't tell you in a survey, but they'll tell you in a training session, all sorts of things. So we take a lot of that back. And I could spend hours because I have a list of about, I think it's, well, depending on how you count it, either 50 or 500 items that I want us to work on. and we're always developing new functionalities based on that feedback I get from our customers. Particularly when we got to Soup 4 and Soup 5 and that transition time, we looked at where we had been in the past 7 years and where we wanted to be and where our customers wanted to be. And we made a major switch from being a under the radar, we're not going to know a lot about anything and just kind of let people do their own thing, to realizing that CIOs and customers wanted us to give them information, track information for them, provide them with things like, is this EP compliant? How does this meet this requirement? Can we track that a certain agency might want this particular item to be what's being purchased by their agency? Different ways of tracking what they're buying, how it relates to both the government and agency, and then also report back to the CIOs and higher-ups, this is what your agency did this past month or this past quarter, or when OMB says, can you give us a report? They don't have to go digging through orders. We can just hand it to them. So there's a lot of that built into our new systems, and we're tracking it Importantly, we're tracking it without requiring industry to do more work. Oftentimes, the government tends to require industry to do the work for them and forgetting the fact
that— I've heard that, yes.
Yes, and therefore, it costs money. And if it costs money, it's going to raise the cost to government. And there again, going back to why GWACs, well, I have that infrastructure that can do this for you. And I can, and we're going to have a product categorization, for example, which there's a lot of talk about that, but we actually found a third party that's going to do that for us and not require our industry partners to go off and do it themselves.
Rob?
Right. So I think it's important what Joanne said is the infrastructure that's built into these contracts. We've been around for over 20 years doing this. So we have the infrastructure to be able to support our customers and those changing needs that they have, as Joanne said, the reportings that they're looking for, the types of information they're looking for of what their agency's buying and who they're buying it from and how much are they spending to get what they need. That's valuable information that we're able to provide them because of the infrastructure and the systems that we've built over the many, many years of doing this. And, you know, some of the other things that we hear from our customers a lot is, you know, are our contracts able to accommodate the new technologies or the ever-changing technologies that are out there? And the answer is yes, because the contracts were built especially flexible to be able to meet and to meet those challenges as the government has over the next few years. And that flexibility is something that our customers really want and are utilizing. So I think that the customers, can feel that they are comfortable, that they're getting the quality of the service and with the innovative look that we have at our programs and always evolving them and changing them to meet the needs of the customers, I think is where there's a lot of value. And that's the feedback we get from our customers. And customers continue to come back because we get what they're saying and we're listening to them on a constantly and trying to address their concerns and make changes and evolve our program to be able to meet their ever-changing needs.
So let me ask you another question along those lines is what are your customers sort of saying or what are you doing with regard to cyber to try to address the cybersecurity challenges that are ever evolving these days?
Yeah, so on the services contract, we're working with a lot of different agencies who have different requirements when it comes to cyber because there isn't one major requirement that's government-wide for cyber. So we work with them to try to develop language in each of their task orders to be able to meet those needs. And until the government has some major change to the FAR, which requires a clause that addresses all cyber, we'll work with each individual customer to make sure that the statements of work that goes out to our contract holders have a specific language that addresses their needs. We've also tried to put together some templates that people can use, some best practices that some agencies have used so that they can utilize them and look at them, tailor them to what they're looking for. But I see that in the future, we will see some sort of standard language or standard policy that the government has with respect to cyber.
And for a product contract, our main concern for our customers is supply chain risk management.
Sure.
And because of that, we actually participate in the Open Group, which is an international standards committee, and they have the Open Trusted Technology Forum, which is the first accredited program which companies can get accredited for being having policies in place to reduce the risk of counterfeit and tainting. And so we've been very strongly participating in that. And then we added that to our contracts in SUP5 and added the ability to track for each product. Is it an authorized reseller? Is it off the back of a truck? What's the provenance of the product so that when the customer makes a decision as to whether to purchase from this company or this company, they have the information they need to make that risk assessment?
Sure. Another question, and we only have about a minute left, that I'd be remiss if I didn't ask. I know NASA's SUP has been designated as working on a strategic sourcing sort of initiative in the sense of for laptops, I believe.
Well, we all are. Yeah. Dell GWACs, yes.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
So OMB has set up a number of what's called the Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiatives, and one of them is laptop and desktops, and along with the GSA and NIH GWACs, they selected NASA just because somebody had to take the lead, but we're all working together to come up with a standard configuration and to then have available on those contracts the standardized terms and conditions and standardized systems, with hopefully being able to leverage that to lower the cost to the government.
Right. And so it'd be on like your EF.
Yeah, we're participating through the NIH GWAX to be able to provide that to our customers when it becomes available.
My view is that's, you know, looking at the requirements from a strategic perspective, whether it's standard configurations, is a more wholesome, I guess, approach than trying to create a contract vehicle that one size fits all. I mean, that to me, that makes a lot more sense from an enterprise perspective.
Right. I think OMB has been happy with the direction we've taken with it because of that. And, you know, under their direction and with the support of the other GWACs, I think we were coming to that a more realistic view of what you can do with it in the government versus a, you know, kind of in the cloud sort of thing that may never really work.
And we never talked about cloud. I'll have to have you guys come back. We talk about cloud a little bit more specifically. So. And we do. We're at the end of the show, so I want to thank my guest today, Joanne Wojtek. She's a NASA SOUP program manager, and Rob Cohen, the acting director for NIH's GWAC program. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.